Welcome back once again, Parish of the Patriots, installment number 331. Glad you joined us this week. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. I encourage you to listen to it. I do put it separate in case it's just absolutely not your thing. But I encourage you to give it a try at least once. It probably may not be exactly what you think about. And even if you're not a believer, you might get something. But it is geared towards people who are already believers. So, yeah, you're not necessarily going to get things spoon-fed to you because it is geared towards people who are already believers. But one way or the other, I encourage you to give it a shot. But if you don't want to, then don't. So it's whatever. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I've got snail mail. That's it. I got snail mail. And the rent on this P.O. box is getting ridiculous. I had to sit down and think, is it even worth doing anymore? But I decided it is. Drop something in an envelope. It does mean a lot. I get something out of it. It's encouraging. Let's get into that listener supporter mailbag before we wander off into today's show. Tony, wanted you to know I got it. No note there, but I did want you to know I did got it. And of course, as always, I really do appreciate it. For Radio Albin, Dan, thank you for making me laugh. And that's from R&G in spirit. And I appreciate it. And I hope you're doing well. It's rough out there. I know. And I hope we can get some entertainment. I want the show to be entertaining and informative and all the rest of it. I don't want to be boring and drone on and on about the same thing. So I do. If y'all can get a laugh out of it and hopefully some information and maybe even some spiritual encouragement, whatever, and get something out of it. Hey, that's what we're shooting. That's what I'm shooting for. And finally here, God bless and thank you for all your hard work and faithfulness, yours in Christ. And that's from Kim. Thank you very much, Kim. It's what I mean. You know, hearing from y'all and knowing you are getting something out of the show. I can't tell you how much it starts feeling sometimes like you're just talking to yourself doing this. It's always nice that folks are getting something. Know somebody is getting something out of it. I'm going to do something. I'm going to kick off this show doing something I don't normally do here. As you well know, for 331 some odd episodes, I don't do news articles on this show. This ain't a news article kind of show. I'm going to actually read a little bit of a news article just to give us somewhere to start. You know, the Christian specific segment is basically things I jot down during the week while I'm spending my personal time focusing on spiritual growth, prayer, whatnot. And when I come to things or consider things that I think would be helpful to other believers, I jot those down and I come back and try and share them here. Which means that even though I might have a rough idea of what we're going to get into, but I don't know where I'm going. I'll have like one line. It's not like I have a script. You know, well, I'll try this topic. If I don't like it, I'll stop and do another topic. But the Christian specifics, I usually have something, a jumping off point. The first half of the show, not so much. It probably shows more often than I would like to admit. And this week is one of those times. And I thought I'd get into this topic here. And to do that, I really have to kind of quote an article here to give us a jump off point. I'll try to remember to link the article in the description here to give credit where credit is due. And I haven't done anything from RT in ages during the Biden time. They were doing this whole, you know, basically implying that anybody, they were really heading towards claiming you're an enemy combatant or something by looking at RT or whatever. So I kind of have stayed away from using them, but I'm going to use them for this. And this article headline, Google founder claims UN is transparently anti-Semitic. And like I said, I'm just going to read a couple three paragraphs here to make a point. Google founder Sergey Brin has denounced the United Nations as transparently anti-Semitic over a report accusing tech firms, including Alphabet, of profiting from Israel's war in Gaza, the Washington Post has reported. Brin made the remarks at an internal Google DeepMind forum last week, according to screenshots reviewed by the newspaper, which reported the exchange on Wednesday. His response came after a recent publication by Francesca Albanese, the UN's special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, which claimed that Google and its parent company Alphabet had provided cloud and AI tools to the IDF during its operation in Gaza, actions the report described as, quote, the genocide carried out by Israel. Now, here's the quote that Bryn says in this internal forum thing. With all due respect, throwing around the term genocide in relation to Gaza is deeply offensive to many Jewish people who have suffered actual genocides. Bryn, who is Jewish himself, wrote, I would also be careful citing transparently anti-Semitic organizations like the UN in relation to these issues. So that's all I'm going to read from the article. That was the jumping off point. Anti-Semitism has jumped the shark. That's probably what I'm going to title this show. I may change my mind, do something else. It's really jumped the shark. It's so now we can, the list of things that are anti-Semitic is so long now that it's pretty much impossible to lay out. I mean, literally, now the UN is anti-Semitic. One of the things I find telling here is the non-denial, you know, this UN report stating that they made money off of this, providing stuff to aid in the genocide. You notice there's no denial here. Turning a profit from genocide. There's no denial. Instead, it's more name calling. I encourage you not to support this level of anti-Semitism. You know, don't. It's very offensive. How dare you call what's happening in Gaza genocide? When we the victims, you got this guy who's probably one of the richest, most powerful people in the world, and yet still a victim. We're the victims of real genocide. I saw a meme quote, you know, from I guess a Twitter thread, and this person says something along the lines of, I've never met a Holodomor survivor because it was an actual genocide. Cool it with the anti-Semitism. It has jumped the shark. I mean, you have, now, did you see the story to where they're talking, now Israel's talking about setting up a literal concentration camp to put the Palestinians in? And not just like, oh, they're going to put 10,000 in there. They're talking about cramming 2 million people. This is going to be a hyper-concentrated concentration camp. Makes you start to think maybe the whole Holocaust thing was like a fantasy. Or something of, you know, or not a fantasy. That's not the way I went to put that. It really isn't. A projection of what ironically would come around being done to other people. They're talking about cramming 2 million people into this quote unquote city. They're not going to build a city from the ground up. They're going to put up a fence and they're going to cram these people in here. 2 million. Granted, it's not 6 million. Yet if you complain about it, you're anti-Semitic. I was thinking about where we're at now. You know, because, I mean, 10 years ago, you know, people making edgy jokes about them that might seem kind of rude, they would point and scream anti-Semitism and everybody be like, yeah, that's kind of ugly. You know, talking about these people, questioning things like there was an actual bear and an eagle in a cage, or my personal favorite, the masturbation. Well, no, I have a lot of favorites, don't you? The roller coaster is one of my favorites. Masturbation machine, the pedal-powered skull smashers. If you question any of that, you're anti-Semitic. But we're at the point now. Everything is anti-Semitic. I'm not sure what isn't anti-Semitic anymore, except people that slavishly support this. I suppose the whatever, I suspect, pretty small number of dispensational Christian Zionist lunatics who think they're supposed to be supporting this for some reason. I suppose maybe they're not anti-Semitic, but I'm not sure. Like I say, the list of things now that fall under the category of anti-Semitism is long. I mean, I was thinking about this before I started recording, and I'm thinking, you know, even certain Jews are anti-Semitic now if they don't support what Israel's doing to the Palestinians. You know, it's important to kind of point that out. You know, when we're talking about a large group, you need to point that, yeah, there are some that don't support this. And they too, I guess, I've seen the accusation made. They word it a little different, but they basically say, if you're a Jew that doesn't support what Israel's doing, then you're anti-Semitic too. They use terms like, oh, he's a self-hating Jew. How are you a self-hating Jew when you're looking at this like, yeah, no, I don't think this is a good idea. I think you're kind of going over the line here. I think we're kind of looking like a bunch of lunatics on the world stage. It's just, it's a term that at this point has lost its meaning. They still sling it around. They still try to bash people with it. And it's really, it has run out of gas. It has jumped the shark. They just need to hang it up. Because ain't no one listening to it anymore. Now the UN's anti-Semitic. How dare you write a report? Dr. Johnson recently on one of his daily nationalist shows, it's been several weeks back, you can go back and find it here. He got into this humanitarian, this thing they're doing now. The Palestinians are starving to death, so they won't let anyone come in and bring food. Now they're doing it themselves. Only what they're doing is they set up an aid distribution point. And they have mercenaries in the IDF. And when the people show up to get what little food is offered, they just shoot them. Granted, it's not as colorful as throwing them in a cage with an eagle and a bear. But it's pretty brutal. How dare you call this a genocide? It's essentially making the accusation, as one of the most rich and powerful people in the world, you're victimizing me by criticizing the fact that we're turning a profit off of assisting Israel with genociding these people. I find it amazing how people don't have, how can I put this? This is unsustainable. I mean, whatever the outcome, I'm not just talking about what they're doing to the Palestinians. I'm talking about the entire project is unsustainable. Israel's a welfare state. They get offended when you say that's anti-Semitic again. As a nation state, Israel is, it cannot exist without the U.S. I've read before where people say, oh, no. You know, Israelis will say no. This was back when the censorship wasn't so bad. You could actually wind up conversing with some of these people online. And they would say, no. We don't even like getting this money from the U.S. because they wind up telling us, you know, we can't genocide the Palestinians. Only it turns out that's not the case. I remember Israelis telling me this back in the day. They say, oh, no, you don't understand. We as Israelis, we wish our government would quit taking this American money so they couldn't tell us what to do, which telling them what to do was allegedly telling them they couldn't just go on and genocide the Palestinians. And again, time has proven that wasn't the case. It's a bit disingenuous because they could refuse the money, but they don't. The truth of the matter is Israel exists as a welfare, as a parasite off of the U.S. And without the U.S., Israel ceases to exist. I mean, you could technically, maybe it would be there. My point here is when you step back, because people get lost in the woods, you know, and you step back and look at the big picture here. This is an unsustainable project because the U.S. is on the way out. I mean, the U.S.'s ability to keep supporting this parasite, this welfare state on the other side of the planet. I mean, the clock is ticking. This just isn't going to keep going on. Now, I do think the Ukraine thing, again, Dr. Johnson's talked about it, the new Khazaria project. I do think that was a key element there, besides just attacking Russia, is they've also at the same time, because the Palestinians get all the press coverage. The genociding and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians gets, I say press coverage, it gets zero press coverage for the most part here in the U.S. But, you know, it gets highlighted because it's so in your face. But the more subtle ethnic cleansing that is the Ukrainian people, is particularly Ukrainian men. They're being genocided. They're just using the Russians, you know, throwing them at the Russians and cleansing them. They're wiping them out. I cringe. I know y'all do too. I cringe every time. And you know, like I used an article from RT, and the Russians and RT wear me out because they talk about this neo-Nazi regime in Kiev. That Nazi regime in Kiev. Like we're supposed to not notice that pretty much virtually everyone running the Kiev government is Jewish. From Zelensky on down. Not every single one, but the ones calling the shots here. This is a Jewish state and no one will say it. It's the neo-Nazi regime in Kiev. I mean, it's whatever. I guess it's the way they have to market it to their own people. Gets a little tiresome. But the point here is, I think an element of the whole Ukraine thing was to create a backup plan in case Israel falls apart. The problem is, you run into the same fundamental problem. If you discontinued the Israel project and moved all of them to Ukraine, you're going to still have the same problem. They've got to exist as a parasite, as a welfare state. And it's not going to change the fact that the U.S. is going to run into the brick wall of not being able to do that. You know, yeah, the Israel lobby is ridiculously powerful in America. But, I mean, at some point in time, you can't get blood out of a turnip. What are you going to do? Demand everybody in America work 80-hour work weeks and give 100% of their income to the government so they can turn around and hand it to Israel or Ukraine or whatever the new or current ethnic Jewish state is? Is that realistic? At some point in time, people are just not going to do it. As brainwashed and beat down as people are, at some point in time, it's just not going to happen. So it's not sustainable. My point here is, even if you moved it to the Ukraine project, the Ukraine, you're just changing sites. The fundamental underlying problem is still there. You know, everybody focuses on Israel and the problem with Israel being in the Middle East, and those are valid points. But even if you took and moved that to say Ukraine, the fundamental underlying issue of it has to exist attached to a greater power, in this case, the U.S., that remains there. Now, they were supposed to, the plan, I believe, and I think there's documentation to prove this, the plan several, you know, a while back was that as the U.S. failed, they were going to replace the U.S. with China. But the Chinese aren't necessarily, don't seem to be so on board with that plan. So now they're kind of flailing around. You talk about, you know, like things, just to bear down on this fact that it has to exist, extracting wealth from a larger power. And why that is, because, you know, if you were to say wall off Israel, you say, okay, the Palestinians are gone. They've ethnically cleansed the Palestinians. Palestinians are gone. And I think a lot of Israelis think that would solve all their problems. You run out all the Palestinians. You've killed them all. And whatever ones you didn't kill have fled. And you built a big wall around Israel, though, and cut them off. They're not going to be self-sustaining. They do usury. I mean, you know, usury, money schemes and things such as this has always been traditionally the way they make their living. And to do that, you have to have somebody to do that from. You see what I'm saying? You're not going to take a look at Russia, for instance, and they've put all these sanctions on Russia. And they've kind of had, I mean, they've had effect, but it's been very limited because they're a big enough country. They're self-sustaining. They can make their own stuff. Yes, there's inconveniences. They're like anime, you know, you can't go down and have McDonald's in Moscow, but that's okay because you can go to WickDonald's. It's totally, instead of the Golden Arches, it's the Golden W. They go to WickDonald's. It's the same crappy food. Well, actually, it's probably better than McDonald's. You go to WickDonald's. In other words, they were able to work around it because they make their own stuff and they do their own thing. If you were to put that level of sanctions on Israel, it would fall apart. They've got to be able to do this with this other country, to draw wealth from a host, from a larger country. I mean, look, this is like describing water being wet. My point here again is when you step back and look at the big picture, which I like to do, this whole thing is unsustainable. They can keep doubling down on this stupid plan to genocide the Palestinians in front of the whole world. I don't understand. I can't comprehend it because, you know, for whatever reason, I can't comprehend thinking that this is going to solve your problems. And then you double down on it by accusing everybody, pointing out what you're doing as being anti-Semitic. One of their largest supporters in a lot of ways on the domestic front here in the U.S. and in Europe as well is the left, you know. That's kind of been their foot soldiers on the U.S. domestic front. And they've lost so much of the rank and file. I mean, yeah, they have their paid for guys that show up and do riots or whatever. But the rank and file left is done with these people. You know, now they're anti-Semitic. You see, they've spent years calling the nationalist right anti-Semitic. But now they've lost a lot of the rank and file left with what they're doing. It is mind-boggling to me to keep doubling down on this and going, hey, wait a minute. You know, and not stopping and going, wait a minute. We can only go back to the anti-Semitism / Holocaust well so many times. That well is dry. You're pulling up dirt in the bucket and they just keep doubling down on it. This is something, even though the media tries, and a lot of the media here in America tries to cover it up, you can't. Something done on this scale can't be covered up. You can not talk about it, but people go online. People are aware of it. And it's like there's nobody in position of power in Israel that's stopping. And I'm sure maybe there are. You know, I'm not aware of it. But, you know, you would think there would be people stopping going, hey, you know, we keep doubling down on this and all we're doing is turning the entire planet against us. And the only reason that hasn't blown back into real negative consequences is because we have control of the U.S., which they do. I mean, again, anti-Semitism, to point out that basically you own all of the American politicians, thus you own control of the American government. That's the only thing protecting you from that. And this is on a clock. The U.S. ability to do these things is still there, but it ain't going to be there forever. This whole thing is unsustainable. And again, there, I don't see anybody in positions of power in the Israeli government, you know, that seem to recognize that, you know, hey, guys, we're going down a bad path. There are, you know, individual Jews that are seeing that and speaking out against it. And what do they get? Instead of they're not getting listened to either. You have individual Jews who are like, yeah, no, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't be genociding these people. And they too, apparently, are anti-Semitic. They get dismissed. Oh, you're a self-hating Jew for being against genociding the Palestinians. I would say it's a Jew with some common sense is saying this is not something we should be undertaking. You know, it's not sustainable. I get wore out with people who, on the other side of this, that create, you know, how do I want to say, they create this caricature of Israel or the Jewish people as being omnipotent, you know? You know what I'm saying? When you point things like out, oh, no, no, this is all a part of their grand scheme. They're going to win. You know what I'm talking about. You know the type of people I'm talking about. You point this out, you're like, man, there's a real flaw in this plan. Oh, no, no, you don't understand. They've got a level 5 deep plan and you're going to lose. They themselves, they're these people that create this caricature of Jews being omnipotent. Like, it doesn't matter. Just give up, because it doesn't matter what you do. They're already 5 steps ahead of you and they're all going to win no matter what. Man, they're just people. Come on. They're making mistakes. They're making a huge screw up here on the global stage. And again, you can step back and go, this isn't some omnipotent 5D chess. People are creating the QAnon version only for Israel. Trust the plan. Netanyahu, trust the plan. Netanyahu's going to win. It doesn't matter what you do. They're going to win. They always win. Instead of stepping back and going, whew. You know, and again, there are individual Israelis or Jews that see this. I say Israelis if they live in Israel. I'm using Jews for those that don't live in Israel. That's why I'm kind of using, interchanging the two terms. You know, there are those that see this. And again, they're getting dismissed. They're a self-hating Jew because they're not pro-genocide and they're sounding the alarm. You know, I don't know how many of those people are doing it because they're, you know, literally opposed to doing this as being morally wrong, or how many of them are looking and going, this is a bad strategy because we're turning the entire planet against us, and at some point yelling Holocaust and anti-Semitism isn't going to cut it anymore. The term has gotten abused to the point that nobody's going to hear it anymore. And you go in and point the screen. It doesn't. It's like, you know, yelling fire over and over. The boy that cried wolf. We are at this point when people are observing. You can observe in real time these ridiculous, over the top, just brutality that's not excusable. I'm sorry, you can't. You can't justify it. That you can go back and say, oh, but you know, October 7th or whatever. Look, nobody's buying the hospital as Hamas anymore. I mean, just nobody. You can do it, and you can say those that don't believe it are anti-Semitic or Hamas supporters or whatever slander, derogatory terms you want. And all you're doing is making more and more people, you know, you're making the nation state of Israel is turning into a pariah state. And that brings us full circle back to the point that it can't survive as a pariah state. You can isolate or attempt to isolate a country like Russia. You know, you can have limited ability to do that just because it's of its sheer size, but you can attempt to isolate a country like Russia and, you know, try to turn it into a pariah state, and it can survive. Israel can't survive as a pariah state. It just can't. It's got to have outside support because of the very, just the way it's set up. It's by its fundamental nature. It is, you know, it just requires that. And it's not going to be able to survive as a pariah state. You step back and look, and it's like you can holler anti-Semitism all you want as the ship goes down, but the ship is still going down. And these claims of this are becoming more and more ridiculous. I saw a story. We're going to get into Christian specifics there, but I saw a story recently in Britain. One of these groups is protesting against this genocide. They climbed over a fence or whatever in the UK and sprayed graffiti on like Britain's 2 remaining fighter jets that are airworthy. And now the UK government has declared these people as a terrorist organization for spray painting graffiti. We've crossed over into this line of absurdity. And again, it's not going to be sustainable. You can cry anti-Semitism all you want to, but it's jumped the shark. Let's go ahead and head off into the Christian specific segment. We got another half of the show to go, and we're going to have great stuff to cover there as well. So as always say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. I read an interesting article the other day. It's an opinion piece, and I'm not going to link it up here because I'm not going to sit here and quote the article, but it was written from a Catholic perspective and talking about the sorry state of marriages today. I you have to assume they mean particularly in the West. I don't know what marriages, the state of marriage in other areas is like, but they were talking about the sad state of marriages. And moreover, the article was had the point of who is to blame. It was probably, it would probably come as a total shock to you. Brace yourselves for this. According to the article, it's men's fault. It's shocking, right? It's men's fault. And I'm just sitting here thinking, this is like an ultimate form of victim blaming. It's men's fault. Men need to man up. The reason there's problems in marriages, the reason so many families are ungodly, it's the man's fault. I know we've talked about this before, but maybe we'll get into some things we haven't a little bit, or get into some angles that we haven't before. But this really got me going. As all of you know, I'm very sympathetic to young people. You know, I'm getting older. You know, I am at that really late autumn stage of life. And so most of the people I interact with a lot of times are older people, and people older than myself. And I always make it a point to, you know, when the topic of these younger generations come up, I always make it a point to tell people IRL or on this show how much I'm sympathetic. I feel sorry for the younger people today because they've got it tougher than we do. If you're a younger person and your parents or grandparents are trying to tell you, they don't know. You know, not, some of us, we get it. We look around this world and I don't know. You know, honestly, I don't even know what to tell you on some of the stuff that y'all are dealing with because it wasn't like this. And it made me how people don't realize that it wasn't always like this. Even older people like my age or older, they should know better from experience, and they get so brainwashed, they act like it's always been this way when it hasn't. This applies to so many elements in life. I see, and I'm going to get off on a tangent. I'll reel this back into the marriage article in a minute, but this opens up something else I really want to talk about. Because this is all a part of truth. And I know sometimes I ramble about things that you would sit here and you're like, you waited for the Christian specific sermon. You waited a week. You waited through 30 minutes of rambling about whatever the hell else. He's finally going to talk about our faith. And maybe you'll get a little booster shot for the week. And then he gets off on this rambling thing that doesn't seem to have anything to do with Jesus Christ. It does. If you're walking in truth, it has to pertain to Jesus because he is, him and Jesus Christ and truth are inseparable. So if the topic is truthful, then we're dealing with Jesus. If you're denying the truth, then you're denying on a certain level or another Jesus Christ. So it does matter, is what I'm saying. So bear with me. I'm going to go back to the marriage article, but this fact that people act like it's always been this way. And then you have idiots or shills that try to tell you, they try to present you two extreme examples and tell you you've got to pick one. And it's bullshit. You know, I watch several YouTube channels, you know, with these various lawyers talking about civil rights, and they always feature, you know, these videos, body cam videos or whatever, of cops being retarded and outrageous. And one of the things I find interesting here is the comments that will be on these videos from people, bots. I don't know. I kind of lean towards dead internet theory. I think a lot of what we read are bots, but people can be such NPCs. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to take another turn here. We're going to at least stay on this little side road. We're going to stay on this frontage road before we get back onto the main topic. And, you know, you'll watch this video of some cop being retarded and outrageous in their behavior. And there'll be these people in the comments that are raging that we just need to get rid of all police. Like, that's realistic. You know, and if you don't want to get rid of all of them, they'll make these blanket statements, you know. Every one of these cops is horrible and a tyrant. We need to just get rid of all of them. We don't need. This is what I mean. They people present you this false. It's false. It's of the devil. Because there's no truth in him. This is why we're always having to weed through. Even though you think you're not doing something spiritual, you are. Every day when you have to look at something and try to decide what is correct, what is true, and what is false, you are taking spiritual action. Truth is a central element of Jesus Christ, and there is no truth in the devil. You see what I'm saying? So even though you may be looking at a topic that on the surface you're like, well, this has nothing to do with my faith. This has nothing to do with religion. It does, my friend. It does. Because you're having to figure out where is the truth and where is not. And you have these people that present you false choices. You see how these cops are being outrageous? You know, pulled over somebody for minor traffic infraction, start screaming at them, drag them out of the car, beat the shit out of them, throw them in cuffs, arrest them for resisting arrest, and whatever else. And the answer is no police. Like, that's realistic. Like I say, I have to wonder how many people like that are morons and how many of them are actual shills, bots. I don't know. And yet somebody of my age or older, they can tell you it didn't used to be this way. You know, it didn't. How about we have an answer like no more militarized police? All of that shit started after 9/11. I know I've said this before. I'll say it again. Before 9/11, it wasn't that bad. Yes, there were things. There were elements. I mean, if you look at Waco and Ruby Ridge, you know, the feds have always been corrupt. But I'm not talking about feds here. I'm talking about your local police, local cops. Yeah, you had guys that were ridiculous. But for the most part, a lot of these people, if you could talk to them like you had some sense, they would be reasonable. This military police thing, this all came in after 9/11. In other words, things weren't always this way. And yeah, people will tell you your only choice is you have to do the yes sir, no sir, badge licking, or we have to get rid of all the cops. There's no middle ground. And that's a false choice. It really work to make sure we don't know anything. You know, we know how history is distorted, but I think we often don't consider how much recent history is distorted. Let's say someone like myself, like when I was a teenager and out getting into, shall we say, hijinks and various mischief back in the 1980s. And I would get stopped while neck deep in various hijinks and mischief. And, you know, you could actually talk to these cops and be reasonable. And they would be like, you know, you better go home like now. Like, I better not see you out no more. They weren't out here dragging me out of the car, beating the shit out of me. Thank goodness. It wasn't always like this, you know? It wasn't. But they want to convince people, okay, here's your two extreme choices. Which one do you want? Do you just want to get rid of all the police and live in a lawless society? Or do you back the blue and do the yes sir, no sir, and yes officer, no officer, and act all humble and submissive when they roll up, no matter if they're being unreasonable or not? These are false choices, and it's a deception. Now, this leads to the topic, and I'm going to get back to that marriage article. But one thing leads to another. And I think, honestly, when I do this, in my opinion, y'all may think it sucks, but it's my show, so I get to do it anyway and subject you to it as long as you decide to listen. You know, going from one thing and following our train of thought on these things, I think is fun. These are the discussions I enjoy when we kind of just roll and this leads us to next thing. And that is overcoming and recognizing and overcoming a lifetime of conditioning. I was thinking just the other day about the purpose of the education system in this country. And this is one of those things. It's always been this way. It has been because it was this way during my lifetime. I didn't realize it. But, you know, the whole purpose is condition you on what to think. Everything is in the education system and in other facets of our lives, but we'll just pick on the education system for a minute, is designed to condition you not to think, but to think the correct things. Let me correct that here. I didn't say it right. Everything is set up to prevent you from understanding how to think critically and instead what to think, as in the proper thing. If you think back when you were in school, because for all of us, you look back and there were a couple of students in your class. And, you know, they were the really smart kids. You know, they were the really smart ones. And everybody knew they were the smart. And you went through your whole school, because depending on how big your school was, a lot of times you'd go through the same group of people your entire life. If you live in a smaller town, you went to school with somebody, basically the kids you started in kindergarten when you graduated high school, they were the same kids. So you knew these people over a long period of time. And you would have these people that, like, when it came to grades, and you would have this handful of people, you know, by the sixth grade, you knew who was going to eventually be the valedictorian when y'all graduated, because they were the smart kids. And now looking back, I realized they weren't necessarily smart. They just had good memorization skills. Because the reality is, what do? When you go to school, they tell you what to think. And the students who are able to memorize that and then repeat those answers back to the teacher, they're going to get the better grades. And they're the smart kids. But if they're not given the answers ahead of time, how smart are they? Now, saying they're exclusive, there are people maybe have really good memorization skills that are also able to work through things. But I'm just talking about in the strict confines of how the educational system works. It's they tell you this is how it is. This is what you think. And those that can memorize enough of that and regurgitate it back, they're going to get the good grades. And they're the quote unquote smart kids. This carries over into professionalism. I mean, you read stories, or you've had experiences yourselves where these doctors, like a doctor, you're dealing with a doctor, you're assuming you're dealing with somebody that was one of the smart kids. But the reality is, again, it's all memorization skills. They memorize what you're supposed to think, what you're supposed to do, and they regurgitate it back. And you'll run into someone like a doctor and you start questioning, you know, oh, well, you need to go on, I don't know, Ribivzadol or Zanorphilus. They always have these weird names for these drugs. And you start asking them, well, this, that, I've heard there are side effects, da, 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 da. And they don't have any answers. It's like a blank stare. They have no clue because they weren't told about any of that. They're not able to look at things critically and start working through problems. You know, well, if this is what you're saying I need to do, what about this, that, or the other? They have an inability. A lot of these guys, they have a complete inability to work through any of that. They just know how to take in the information, memorize it, and then repeat it back. And you think about it, it's perfect for something like being a doctor. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's not all negative. If there is a set procedure, you know, oh, well, you know, this is how you suture up a wound. That's a good thing. They remember how to do that. But if you think about it, being conditioned to just memorize and then regurgitate is perfect for being a salesman, to being a drug dealer, a salesman for the pharmaceutical industry. You give them the information, you take them to a seminar, give them a free trip where you tell them all about the wonderful benefits of Zolongdacroft. The Longagator or whatever the hell. And you know, you're going to send that guy back to his office and he's going to sit there and regurgitate that at his patients, who are going to take him at his word because he must be one of the smart kids, right? it's a perfect setup. And one of the things that you have to do on your walk of truth is to recognize that and start breaking out of it. You know, and most people don't. I assume if you're listening to this show, I'll compliment you because whether you realize it or not, I think being able to listen to content like we have here on Radio Albion, it means you're open to discarding some of that brainwashing, some of that conditioning. I don't know where you're at on it. It's none of my business, but it shows you're open to it, which puts you ahead of most people. Most people you're going to wind up to, because as you all well know, I've beat it to death. But don't talk to me about waking people up. I used to believe in that, and then I got smarter. I got new information, and I, with critical thinking, I've tossed that out. I don't believe in waking people up because I believe it's impossible. The conditioning is too set in. One of the things that's, and I mean, just from a practical standpoint, the program is very, it works well. They have really come up. It's evil and it's wicked, but it works well. Because you can talk to people, And they'll be going along with what you're saying. And then there's trigger points in the conditioning that kick in and it elicits an unpleasant emotional reaction and they will run away from you. They were with you up to this point. And then when you trip one of these triggers, they will get emotionally upset. They will have an unpleasant internal emotional reaction. Cognitive dissonance, if you would, and they will immediately retreat from everything they were agreeing with you on, and they'll go right back to where they were, right back to the conditioning, the narratives they were told as they were growing up, as they went to school, because it's nice and it's safe. They're back. It's like I say, it's evil and wicked. But it is impressive how well it works. And you will run into this time and again. And for the vast majority of people, you're not going to break through that conditioning. I just don't believe you can. Some people are able to. You're listening here. You're on that road. On that level of some sort. But the more you deal with other people, the more you recognize that most people can't. They just, it worked too well on them. You know, and so for me, I think the old idea of waking people up, I think it's ludicrous. Now, I'm 17 minutes. Let's get back on the freeway. I read this article from a Catholic perspective. It was an opinion piece. I can't believe we went down and covered all of this other territory. It's fun. I'm having fun. I hope you're enjoying it too. So, according to this person, And like I said, I don't have the article in front of me. I'm doing this off of memory. But if I recall right, I think the person writing it was like a priest or something. But it was specifically a Catholic perspective. And no, I'm not dogging on Catholics. And I don't do that. I'm going to dog on this article, though, because it's so wrong. And according to this article, the reason, you know, one of the big problems with people in general, and you know, and their lack of spirituality, lack of faith, their lack of devotion to the faith, etc., so on and so forth, is it's men's fault. Why? Because you see, men are not being hardcore enough. They say, how did they put it? Men are effeminate. That doesn't mean they said that doesn't mean you're gay, like, you know, you're, oh my gosh, but it means you're just not being manly enough in your household. You're not taking charge, leading. And yeah, I mean, there could be an element of truth in that for sure, but it's to miss the point. And again, as a believer, truth matters, and I'm not going to let it slide. The truth always bears pointing out. You know, I mean, it does. So, according to this, men need to be taking charge. See, they're leaving too much to their wife. They need to be the man in charge. And yet you go into any church, Catholic or otherwise. Well, I say that, and I have to stop and put a footnote here. I say that in partial ignorance because I'm not Catholic. You know, I sit here and throw something and then be like, you ain't Catholic. How do you know? But I'm willing to bet. You go into any church and, you know, you say, okay, let's get the congregation together and have your Catholic priest or your Baptist preacher or your minister or whatever. And do a sermon on the importance of women submitting to their husbands. Have a young couple come in and they do this counseling with the church father, the church leader. I don't say father because I don't believe in that, but the church leader, the pastor, the priest. And they're going to do a counseling session because this young couple is going to get married. And you as a preacher, priest, and you look at the woman and says, are you ready? Are you ready to do this and submit to your husband? And what are they, they're going to run away. And that's why most church leaders, in other words, you got an article here admonishing men for not, you know, standing up, manning up and being the man of the household. And yet these very same church leaders, preachers, pastors, whatever, they themselves will cower back. More than likely, they tell you, oh, we really don't preach that anymore. You see, you tell a man, you need to be the manly role like in the Bible in your household. And then they themselves, when it comes to the truth, well, it's going to upset the women. So we're not going to talk about that. Isn't that a little bit hypocritical? You have your traditional marriage vows, you know, that people have done before they got new and modern and started making up their own vows. And, you know, women will tell their preachers. I know of it. Women will tell their preachers up to their front, up front to their face. I'm not going to do that whole thing about submit and obey. I'm not doing that. So you better not bring that up because I'm not vowing to submit and obey. And what did the preacher do? Okay, we won't put that in there. Instead of saying, stop, whoa, 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 then you ain't ready to be married. If you ain't going to ready to submit and obey, then you see what I'm saying? They're going to dog on men and say, oh, you're not manning up and being the man of the household. And then they themselves cower down to the women. And oh, well, if you don't want to talk about submit and obey, you're a modern, strong, independent woman and things are different. Anytime a preacher starts to talk to you about things are different now, we don't preach that part. You can stop. Yep. According to this article, again, men need to be manning up and taking charge. You see, you got to let your wife know that you're a boss. The preacher himself, when you're getting married, if she tells him, I ain't doing that, submit and obey, so don't you bring it up. He's going to, almost used a vulgar term, he is going to wuss out and run the other way and say, yes, okay, we won't do that then. A lot of women don't like that, and we don't really do that anymore. But then they're going to turn around and say, well, everything ain't running like it's supposed to, it's because you're not being the man. Where were you? Don't see you being an Apostle Paul and saying, I don't even allow women to speak in church. Yeah, okay, yes, ma'am. My wife, you know, happy wife, happy life, right? You know, and I had to keep my wife happy too. Shut the hell up. How the hell are you going to tell other people they ain't got theirs together and you ain't even got what you're supposed to be doing together? You see what I'm saying? Now, according to, and I read this, and you know, oh, men need to man up and be the boss of the house. Okay. And what if she doesn't do what you say? You know, what about that? I mean, if you ask them, say, okay, well, what if she doesn't? What if you're trying to be the man of the house and she's in complete rebellion and says, no, I ain't going to do anything you say. We're going to do it my way. What's he supposed to do? Is it supposed to knock shit out of her? Oh my gosh, no, that's like the worst thing you could do. That's probably even worse than blasphemy in their minds. No, I'm not advocating going around knocking the shit out of your wife. But the whole point is, you criticize men on one hand and say, oh, you're not manning up enough. But then they never have a, okay, well, what if? What if you're trying to be the boss and she ain't going to have none of it? She's going to have it her way. She's stiff-necked. Hardcore in rebellion that says, no, I'm not. What's he supposed to do? They never offer that. They just sit there and say, oh, you know. And he's going to be saying a lot of the same preachers, priests, whatever. When it's Mother's Day, they're going to do an extra hour and a half long sermon on the importance of women and how wonderful women are, and they're so great. And then on Father's Day, you're going to get a lecture about how men aren't manning up and not being proper fathers, and you're really a failure. I've seen it time and time again, and it gets pretty old. Never have no answers. They don't deal with the reality of what we have in this world, of what younger people are dealing with in this world today. They look around and they see a problem and they take the easy route. It's men's fault. They're easy to blame. You know, they're just like, blame white people. You know, that's a safe target. Make fun of white people. You can do that. You're going to be a comedian and you're doing your stand-up routine and you want to do a routine like making fun of different races of people. You're going to make fun of white people because you know that's safe. It's the same shit. Blame the men. That's safe. You can do that. Nobody's going to give you a hard time. What if? What are they supposed to do? Now, I mean, the fundamental idea, yes, the man should be in charge of his household. But when you leave out all of the reality of the world, real people are out here dealing with, you're just victim blaming. You know, okay, so what if? What if she don't? What are you going to do? Now, we were talking earlier. See, these things come back into play. When I was rambling early and I was talking about people who come up and they give you this false, I was talking about like the police and people say, well, the only answer is no police. You will have people then, and this I believe is one of the deceitfulness that did, one of the deceitful elements of the enemy. They'll come forward and offer you a false binary choice. You have these people, they come up and they tell you, well, women are a mess and they're not going to obey you if you get married and they're liable to do this and liable to do that and they can divorce you at any time and financially ruin you, blah, 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 blah. And so the only answer is to go live a hedonistic, materialistic lifestyle. If you can go just, you know, be rich, you know, and have sex with as many random women as you can, that means you win. That's bullshit too. It's another case of a false choice. They give you two extremes and say, pick one. Oh, look, the reality is you're going to have to work a lot harder. If you're a young man and you're trying to fulfill a man's natural purpose in this world of getting married and starting a family, you're going to have to work at it because, you know, this ain't the 1950s to where, you know, most women are reasonable and, you know, she hadn't been run through by 600 other dudes. This is 2025. You can find them, but you're going to have to work at it. It's a needle in a haystack, and that's the reality. You know? I mean, you come back on this topic, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, because it amazes me. We don't have biblical marriage in the biblical sense doesn't even exist today. We don't. We have this contract that's administered by the state. That has nothing to do with God. You can have a preacher stand up there and say, we stand before God today. God doesn't have anything to do with it. Because you ain't married and you got to get that license and permission slip from the state. And it's the state that will decide if you're divorced. God ain't got nothing to do with it. That's a reality. Biblical marriage, you know, the reality. Your wife can decide she likes Chad the gardener better than you and go out and all adultery around. Well, in biblical marriage, you know, the deterrent to that was her and Chad both would be drug outside the city gates and beaten to death with rocks. So it served as a deterrent. See, there was the what if. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. What if she does? Well, then she gets drug outside the city gates and we beat her to death with rocks. Her and Chad get beat to death with rocks. helps discourage the behavior. They get the Taliban treatment. You know, be doing that. So you deal with the reality of what you got. And again, these people that present the false choice of it's either this or go live a hedonistic, materialistic, empty lifestyle and leave no heirs or descendants to come after you. That's a lie, too. It's a false choice. It's of the devil. You could deal with reality. You could deal with reality and say, okay, this is what you're getting into. You know, I would say hide some money. Go out, find, look, it be realistic. If you think you found a woman that hasn't had, look, finding a virgin, you can just virtually forget. That's like this weird outlier. You're just going to have to, the reality is, again, you're going to have to say, in biblical marriage, that was one of the conditions. Wasn't marriage, she wasn't a virgin. If you laid with her, that was the marriage act. That made you married. That was the ceremony. And if you laid with her and turned out she wasn't a virgin, there was no marriage. You sent her back to her daddy and got your money back because he tried to pull a fast one. Tried to sell you defective goods. That's such an outlier, you're probably not going to find that. What you have to settle for is one that hasn't at least been run through by the equivalent of the number of dudes that are in the German army or something. I mean, she has a body count that's at least in single digits. She doesn't have an OnlyFans. That's reality. And hope you can work with that. And be realistic about what you're dealing with. If you're dating her and y'all are going out, and she wants to be the one in charge all the time, that's already a red flag. You're not going to suddenly get married and she's going to submit. She ain't submitting now. It can be done, but you got to work at it. You're going to have to be real choosy. I always say one of the ways to look at, if you're a young man and you're looking to find a woman to get married, settle down, think of it as you're interviewing people for the most important job you're ever going to hire anybody for. You're screening them. And if they're a poor foot, I don't care how pretty they are or whatever. As soon as you figure out they're a poor fit for the position you're looking to fill, which is your lifetime spouse, then you need to save both of yourselves the headache later down the road. You just, this one I thought would be good, but she's just not going to work out for whatever reason. We don't see eye to eye on certain things, whatever. And nobody's going to agree. Look, nobody's going to agree with you on everything. But, some things you can work with, but some things you can't. You have to figure it out. Again, if you're going to be the man of the house, and you should be, and she's one of these that's, don't ask me to submit and obey because I ain't doing all that, then you know what? You need to save both of yourselves from wasting your time. And you need to move on to the next applicant. Move on to the next interview. See, they don't want to tell people practical, realistic things like this. They just want to sit here and write an article posturing and talking about how it's men's fault. I don't know that I've ever read an article written by a priest, pastor, or whatever that went on about how rotten women are today. No, never. It's always men's fault. Yeah, and they might give you a little break. They might say, yeah, they're bad. But it's still your responsibility as a man. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know, man. Anyway, it's crazy. It's crazy. Look, you just deal with the reality. And again, these guys that tell you, the answer is go be materialistic and a heathen and just go live a hedonistic lifestyle. If you can be Andrew Tate or somebody, that's what you should be shooting for. That's bullshit, too, and that's a lie from the devil. You're just going to deal with the reality for what it is and make the best of it that you can and plan accordingly. I would say, young man getting married, get your little Bitcoin account or something that she don't know about and score a little money back that she don't know about. If she bails on you down the road, you have a little something to get you going again. If it works out, then you put something back for the both of you. You know, for your retirement or hard times or whatever. You have some emergency money you can fall back on.
You can't hide money from you.
Shut up. Anyway, it's got to deal with the reality situation. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the discussion. I enjoyed having it. A lot of fun. Hope you got something out of it. I appreciate you joining us today. Dr. Johnson will be here tomorrow with his Orthodox Nationalist show. And he'll wrap up our week on Thursday with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And of course, as always, I do hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.